You are welcome to session 304. If we go beyond record, non-record, what comes next? So welcome this morning. You will be hopefully entertained and stimulated by the tag team here, Mike Miller, that's me, and Reynolds Cahoon. And we're hoping to take you through a discussion of the concept of records, non-record, and whether or not it still has meaning for archivists and records managers, and if so, what that meaning is in the 21st century, in the age of Web 2.0. And Ren's going to lead.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning. When we were together last year, let me ask, how many were in our session last year where we talked about record, non-record? Two. Okay. Well, then, so we're going to recap a little bit what we talked about last year, and we apologize to you who maybe have already seen or heard some of this. So when we were together last year, we talked about the problems with the dichotomy between records and non-records. And we talked a little bit about my friend called the Domino Man. Who can tell me what's going on in this guy's life? Anybody? Don't be bashful. It's early in the morning, but what's going on with this guy? Pardon me? Okay, so he's trying to create a little space for himself, but he doesn't understand that as a result of that single action, he may cause some significant personal bodily harm to himself. This kind of scenario exists every day in every walk of life. What we're going to talk about is how to avoid some of these unintended consequences. From last year, our basic fundamental position is we're going to give you the end point from the beginning, is that our business processes have fundamentally changed. The way we work has changed. We've engaged technology to support business processes, but we haven't done nearly as good a job at managing the records that support those business processes electronically, particularly. Records are only a part of the information assets that an organization creates. Important, absolutely, but only, an increasingly small part of the assets of an organization. Non-records may exist, but we believe that the distinction, the dichotomy that's created between records and non-records is no longer really useful and, in fact, may be one of those unintended consequences, may be causing us more harm than good. We believe our definition of what needs to be managed may be sub-optimizing our organizations, and by that we mean that if the emphasis really is on is something a record or not, we might not be taking advantage of the inherent value in the material that we consider non-record, and we're not being able to extract the value from those materials to use in our organizations. So we think it's probably better to manage all information assets according to records management principles. Specifically, probably ISO 15489 would be a good foundation from which to base our conversation. And how this is done depends very significantly on what's going on in the rest of the organization. In other words, records management or information management doesn't drive the organization. It's there to support the organization. And our intent is to optimize the organization, not optimize how records and information are managed. Does that make some sense? You nod our head this way. This means yes. This means no. Just to be sure we're awake this morning. Okay, so we know a lot about how to manage records and information. In fact, our knowledge is amazing. Our ignorance is even more so. So what we're going to talk about today is not necessarily the final word at all. It's a set of ideas that we think come together to help really understand the issues around the dichotomy of records and non-records. So we're starting from what we call our mental model of an organization's ecosystem. Now, a mental model is basically how we view the world. It's the picture we hold in our mind of how something is or how something works. It's not the real world. It's only a map of it. It's only a picture of it. But in this particular view of the ecosystem, records and information assets sit at the very heart, kind of the power that helps run the rest of the organization. And surrounding it, in order to make records and information assets effective in the organization, is a records and information management program, business processes, and enterprise architecture. Those three things combined together tend to drive how records and information assets are managed. And beyond that, on the outer rings there, we have organization and culture, governance, IT infrastructure, the people in the organization that all have an influence and are involved in the RIM program, business processes, and are affected by enterprise architecture. The outer ring, the consumer and community, customers, suppliers, laws and regulations, also have an influence directly or indirectly depending on the conditions of the organization and what you're trying to accomplish. So the reason we wanted to give you this as an overview is that it becomes very important as we start talking about what are the implications of managing non-record and record together rather than as a separate entities. This is our worldview, our mental model of the what some would call the life cycle of a record or of information. And so if you were to put a big arrow on the end of each one of those bars, it would indicate to you that through time, as a records and information are created and captured, we want to be able to share and repurpose and leverage those materials, extract their value, use them in other places. We want them to be able to search and access and use those materials. And all across that life cycle, we want to manage them. We want to continuously be capable of assessing their value. And we want to ensure that they're appropriately preserved, available, and usable to the organization for as long as they're needed and no longer. So this is kind of our worldview of the process model.
And one of the things to think about here is the way we assess information changes over time. Who assesses it changes over time? Just to give sort of, it happens in all of those layers. The people who do it, their thinking, their model, their need for it, that all changes as we go through time. And a lot of that isn't caught in our more static view of how to do records management and our archives decisions that we make. We'll come back to that too.
And so with appropriate apologies to our friend Mr. Maslow, Dr. Maslow, and we have our mental model again of a hierarchy of needs. At the bottom of the hierarchy is what we characterize as drowning in the digital swamp. That's more and more and more information filling this huge to mix metaphors, this huge bathtub, if you will. And at this point, we don't have a good mechanism to drain that tub. In order to get control, we need to get physical control first, then intellectual control, then disposition control, so we know what to keep, what we can let go. We need to have the capability to preserve what we've decided to keep. And then at that point, we can talk about sharing and reusing and repurposing and exploiting the value of those assets. And a lot of times as organizations, we tend to jump right in and think we can find ways to share and repurpose and exploit this information without having adequate and proper control of it from the outset. So,
it's my turn.
It is, so just go right ahead.
Go right ahead. The reason why we want to bring this up is that the upstream from where you're going to be getting records someday for archives, things are changing. We want to talk about those changes and then figure out what the implications are going to be for archivists as the records begin to move towards archives. And the thing is, a couple of differing, and we'll come back to mental models in just a minute too, but records creators have a different idea, they have a different mental model of records and information than archivists and records managers do. They're end users. Any kind of document can do two things. It can serve as evidence and it's a container for information. End users are interested in containers of information that they can reuse. Archivists and records managers have been traditionally more interested in evidence. So as we go through and rethink, and we'll come back to the ecosystem, if people are thinking differently than we are, and if they are in charge of making the decision of record, non-record, and we are basing what we get on that, we need to go back, then we are in trouble as far as making sure that we will get the evidence we want. Very simple thing, working a lot with records creators, they consider a lot of what we consider most valuable, drafts, comments, that sort of thing, as non-record material. We are not getting that if we are telling them file records, don't worry about non-record. So we have different mental models. It causes confusion and hinders communication with from archivists and records managers to records creators. The mental model frames how we look at things, as Ren had said. And if we're asking records creators to make the distinction right away at the point of creation of is it a record or not, we have a very different mental model than they have because that's not what they're thinking. They're thinking, is it usable or not? So we focus on what information assets must be managed as records rather than how to manage them. That's what we need to do at this point. But if we do that, if that's our focus, then people are going to start saying, I don't need to manage that stuff that I don't consider a record. And that is going to fall below the radar screen, as it says in the bottom there. Records managers and archivists are not included in conversations about non-records if that's what we're focused on, if we're focused on the records aspect. And it's the people who are creating the records who call us in to say, you need to be involved, records managers and archivists, only for records. Non-record stuff, in their mental model, we don't need to be involved in. So, final point on this, people have, even among records creators, there is a very different view of what is a record and what isn't, so we get uneven application of that record-non-record distinction all the way through the process. So, anybody here, anybody pay attention in the news recently? Productivity per worker is up. Good thing. Why is productivity up? There are fewer workers and we have to do more work. Very simple. In that situation, what people are looking at is how can I find the information I need quickly? We are in a time when people are matrix managed. We're in a time when people are working in teams. They need a lot of various kinds of information at their fingertips all the time. That's what they're worried about, is maintaining that information. Records managers and archivists say the easiest way to manage information is get rid of what you don't need. Workers think about, give me better tools so I can find what I need because I think I need all of this. So we have two different views of how this works, and we have to figure out a way to make it possible for people to have the information they need because they're not going to get rid of stuff that they think that they need, and they're in charge of the information now. Why? Because there are fewer support staff. We have more knowledge workers, fewer support staff. Those of us who worked in records and archives 20 years ago traditionally would have said that the people who kept the worst records were lawyers, engineers, knowledge workers. We're all knowledge workers now. Everybody's a knowledge worker. They are managing their stuff to do their business. So we have accountability, transparency, and privacy as driving forces these days. What that means is people are going to be very interested in CYA. Records help to cover your assets. Whose assets they are is the question. Records and archivists tend to think of organizational assets. Individuals tend to think of their own A that they need to cover. That's why they want records to cover their A. We want, as archivists and records managers, records to cover the corporate A. These two mental models are different. And asking people to apply our mental model to their records is going to cause confusion. It's a record for them, it documents their activity, so they want to hold on to it. New media and information streams, more documentation is created, more litigation and regulation, all of these things change the workplace and the way people who are creating records think about what they're creating. Finally, the IT problem has shifted. It used to be storage. It's not storage anymore. Management is an issue, but not storage. Okay. Nope. It sounds like it to me, but that's okay. And finally, record non-record status is not always clear at creation. So you need to think about this in terms of records creation. If people are creating records, if they're creating emails, they don't always know what they're going to need. Next. So, what's the overall impact? If we got rid of or minimized the idea of record non-record, These are some of the changes that we see that would be positive changes that people would have. It would eliminate confusion and misunderstanding about it in terms of the records creators. It would refocus the discussion on management of information assets rather than record status. We would get improved management. There wouldn't be this threshold question that people are immediately asking themselves that they don't understand, is it a record or isn't it? They could switch thinking to, is it something that I need to document the activity or not? And finally, it would improve intellectual control over all information assets. It would reduce complexity and simplify management because we're looking at record, non-record, everybody's looking at it in a different way. And it would reduce the confusion between records policy and legal and compliance programs. Most of the legal issues and most of things like freedom of information, privacy, that sort of thing, doesn't ask about record, it asks about information. And therefore, it's focusing on record confuses people when they're looking at these things. And it would ensure that records managers and archivists have a seat at the table when it comes to looking at information management systems and their disposition.
So is this making some sense to you? A little bit? What we want to do now is talk about what approach might we take to bringing the parties together that have an influence on or have a say in how records and information assets are managed in an organization. And what we want to talk about is aligning the mental models, bringing these mental pictures more in congruence than they currently are today. And so in order to do that, or in doing so, what we're looking for is a way to make records and information asset management sustainable. That is the theme of this conference, and one of the elements of sustainability is scalability. That is, its ability to handle with ever-increasing volumes, ever-increasing complexity, ever-increasing variety of information assets. So what we want to try and do is bringing together these different stakeholders, these individuals, organizations, representatives, who have an influence on how records and information assets are managed. We want to bring them together to identify what we call a path of least resistance in this enterprise ecosystem that ensures that the records and information assets that we create will be usable, will be meaningful, will be, will minimize the cost, whereas the investment is necessary and sufficient. It's not any more than it needs to be, but it's what it needs to be to ensure records and information assets are managed. And today, the truth is that we perpetually underfund the management of our information assets, both in terms of people, in terms of process, in terms of technology, in terms of mindshare. There's not nearly enough attention paid to how we manage these assets. So bringing all these players together, we believe is critically important, and then understanding what their mental pictures are of how the world works and beginning to line those up is what this is all about. Now, that sounds very straightforward, but the truth is it's very hard. It's a very difficult thing to do because so many of us speak different languages. Some speak the language of IT, which, as our friend Jason Barron is wont to say, is something not usually understood by carbon-based life forms. We've got records and information managers who have their own language. The legal folks have their own language. The business process owners have their own language. So not only might our mental pictures be a bit different, but the language that we use to describe those pictures is also fraught with jargon, is fraught with emotion sometimes. And so sorting through all that is not particularly easy, but we believe is the only way out. So we need to understand what the major players in the organization are thinking. Well, the records creator, for example, has certain things that he or she finds important. First, whatever you do, it's got to be easy. No more than one click. In fact, some people say it's got to be clickless. Okay, it's got to be easy, got to be simple. It can't take any of my time. I don't have time for this. That's what the creators, in many cases, are saying. What does the organization say? The organization says, you know, this can't cost me a lot of money. That it's got to be, it needs to be an adequate and proper documentation of the business process, but it's got to be cheap. And so then the general counsel is focused on what? Discovery. Can I find this stuff? Is my discovery complete? Is it accurate? I mean, are we bringing back the things we ought to? Are you minimizing how much time I've got to spend sorting through all this stuff? And of course, the legal people have interesting perspectives on a number of levels, right? How many lawyers do we have in the room here? Okay, we're safe. On the one hand, they want to be sure that there's enough of the right information to cover ourselves, as Michael just said. On the other hand, they want to be sure that anything that might resemble a smoking gun is destroyed as soon as you possibly can, right? So a lot of times it's situation dependent rather than process dependent. So there is a legal perspective to consider here. The records manager wants a complete record, wants to ensure that that file is captures the essence of what needs to be captured. Again, the notion of necessary and sufficient, everything that I need but no more than I need. The dichotomy between record and non-record is critically important to the mental model of a records manager today in many cases. The archivist, however, has a totally different view, or I should say a somewhat different view. The archivist might like to have a folder that's a little bit fatter, might have a little more context in there, might have a little bit more around it than just the thin folder that the records manager provides. Do you want to add anything to that, Michael?
The only thing that I'd add on that is one thing we don't have up there is the mental model of the researcher using the archives. Because the researcher using at the archives is much more of an information-oriented than an evidence-oriented person. They need the evidence there, but what they're really looking for is information, which is why they always want us to have subject files so that they can go through and find the stuff by subject rather than by provenance, original order, that sort of thing. So, and the researcher, generally speaking, never has enough information about his or her topic. We don't necessarily know what those topics are going to be, but we never have enough information for them. And what we have frequently done is cull out a lot of stuff that might have been useful. Leonard Rapoport once said that there was no document created that wouldn't be useful to someone in the future. And what we have done is selected those someones who will find stuff in our records. It's just part of the way we go at things. That's part of what we have to do as archivists and records managers, at least in a paper paradigm.
So how do we get past this? We have to identify where we are for any particular business process. What are we deciding to keep? What are we calling non-record? We need to baseline, in effect, the current state. We need to understand what we would like to do based on managing all information assets. Identify what changes need to be made, what that future state looks like, and then identify the gaps between where we actually are today in managing those information assets and where we want to be, and then find the path of least resistance to get us to that future state and fill the gaps.
So now we're back to the ecosystem. Having thought, you know, listen to that, we're trying to figure out then what are the implications. If we want to have good records, we want to have good records and well-managed information assets generally, how do we do that in a Web 2.0 world? If you haven't come across this book, it's now available through SAA. It's called Managing the Crowd, Rethinking Records Management for the Web 2.0 World. It's aimed at records managers. It's equally of interest to archivists. It's an excellent and thought-provoking book. But if we would change record non-record, if we would sort of drop that as our the first thing people are asked, and if you don't think it's the first thing that people are asked, go look at the National Archives regulations, which spend most of the time in the beginning talking about distinguishing record, non-record, and that carries over in government, and it carries over to private industry as well. So, your people piece up there. Your people are interested in information first. They are the employees who are creating these records. They want to keep information. They don't want to throw anything away. And they have the power to maintain things on their hard drives and in their email and in their PST files. So if that's the way that is, and the organizational culture, for example, is we need to make sure that we can provide transparency, accountability, etc., to everyone for every possible question, or if it's we don't want to keep anything that we don't absolutely have to because it may contain a smoking gun, how do we change governance? How do we change IT infrastructure so that we still have the records we want to get as archivists? Archivists and records managers have always said, if you can't find what you need, the easiest thing to do is get rid of the stuff you don't need. And what the records creators say is, give me better tools so I can find what I need, because I don't want to get rid of anything, because I may need it, because people keep asking me. So how do you make this work so we both have the evidence we need and the end user, the creator, has the information he or she needs? If we did away with record non-record distinction as the primary distinction, how would it change our policy and governance? How would it bring records managers and archivists? You change the policy so we would no longer be asked to come in and look at records as opposed to non-records. We would be looking at everything. How would it change what we get into the archives if people have not gone through prior to the records coming in and called out the non-record information and left us with the records? So these are the sorts of things that the ecosystem helps us to figure out how we would come up with a solution to these problems.
So what's the impact on the IT infrastructure? Our going in assumption here is that the tools that are being employed to create the problem ought to be used, and we ought to find ways to use those same tools and technology to find solutions to the problem. And specifically, we believe that the information technology infrastructure can be a very significant enabler in finding that path of least resistance, where the user has a minimum responsibility for describing or characterizing content, those who want access to these materials over time can apply their own mental models to the material and see it organized and structured in a way that's comfortable and is consistent with the way their minds work. That information technology should be able to provide those kinds of tools for us. So we believe that in order to actually make this idea of record and non-record work in the real world is going to require tools that will characterize these digital assets, these information assets, in ways that are not inconsistent with the way humans think, but that are very consistent, very rigorous, and that actually can extract from the content the themes, the topics, the knowledge contained in those assets, and make it available broadly to those who are doing the research. In other words, let's not depend on human beings to characterize all these information assets. We believe that doesn't scale. We believe that business processes can provide a lot of the information necessary to provide that minimum metadata around it, an information asset, but that technology needs to be applied to those assets to characterize them in a way that will make them useful to not only to ourselves, but to future generations as well. So we think that the distinction between record and non-record and minimizing that distinction won't increase the storage level. We're already storing most of this stuff anyway, and what we don't have is a good way to decide what's worth keeping and what isn't. But what we do think is that technology can help us sift through that material in a way that we haven't really applied in the past.
One of the things looking at the ecosystem piece, consumer and community are expecting a lot more information than they were in the past, and they expect it electronically. That information is drawn from records. As archivists, we obviously can get the hardcore record. I mean, that's part of what we get. But there is also a tremendous amount of information available in electronic form that is created specifically to serve the public. Is it a record of a business transaction? Is it evidence of a transaction? No, it's information made available. We as archivists probably would like to be in on those discussions to make sure that even though it isn't the record, it's just information made available and information usable to the organization internally, that may be a preferred or at least a secondary set of information that we would like to have for an archival collection. So the question becomes, I mean, having worked a good bit with organizations on things like this, their focus right now, and by right now I mean over the last couple of years definitely and into the foreseeable future, is maximizing the return on the information that they have collected to make it more usable to the public. One of the things that the Obama administration has brought forward is, let's collect government information in one place so everybody can use it. And everybody can do their own mashups and pull things together to create better value for the United States. It's all copies. Would we want that stuff? Do we want to know from a historical perspective what the information was that the government made available and readily available to the public? Is that part of what we want to document at the federal level and state, local, or organizational level that you are archivists for? What do you want to document out of that? What is your documentation strategy or collection strategy to pull some records back from the past or some concepts back from the past? So there are lots of things that we can think about here. The way we use this is to try to figure out how to solve the problem. If we're going to do or minimize, do away with record non-record as the first thing people think about, how does the policy change? How does the IT infrastructure change? What changes do we have to make or try to make in the organizational culture? Okay, you want to do some more?
I think that the impact on the culture here is really significant, and sometimes as information management professionals, we don't give nearly enough attention to the intricacies of the cultural differences among our users, the legal people, the business process owners, the records creators. All those folks really do come from different places. And so I think we need to find ways as information professionals to be more sensitive to those different perspectives and recognize that they don't understand what we're saying. And when we, our mental picture of what a record is or what it ought to be is often very, very different than their mental picture. And so it's going to take time to try and to get across, and not just time. It's going to take a level of patience and a level of perseverance for that understanding to actually take place, so that we're really beginning to manage these information assets broadly and not just in little pockets. Oops. Good. Okay.
It goes to sleep quickly.
Yeah. So, Mike, that's all I wanted to add on. Do you want to?
Let's drive on.
Okay.
Okay. Thinking about some of the potential impacts that this might have on archivists. First thing, obviously, is that most of the records of an organization are not going to go to archives anyway, and therefore a lot of the implications of this are more for the records managers and the creating organization than they are for archivists. But there will be some issues for archivists. And the first thing is, where are we going to focus as archivists? Are we focusing on official actions? We want to document the important official actions of the organization, and we want to stick to that. That's our mandate. That's what we're trying to capture. We want to maintain record of for accountability and transparency. That may not be an archival record, but it is a record that is created within the organization because organizations have to do it short term anyway. We want to provide records for researchers, obviously. And then the question of where does the archival interest end as far as your interest in how the creating organization creates and manages whatever you're going to bring into your organization. One of the questions that comes up, I mean, there are lots of things that I, as an archivist, would have loved to have tried to capture, but didn't have either the space or the ability to sort. You're probably all familiar, well, you may not be, but you're probably all familiar with the fact that the National Archives takes the email of the Executive Office of the President, both presidential records and federal records that are created in for the presidency. People who are creating these records are supposed to identify things as record, non-record. That has not worked exactly the way people have thought it would. And what the archives has said after looking at a lot of this stuff is there's a lot of junk in there. There's a lot of stuff that never would have been archival in a traditional appraisal. Obviously, on the presidential side, you have to keep everything that is a record. On the federal side, you would have gone through and done an appraisal. One thing you do get out of it, even though you have extra stuff, is a better handle on a lot of things as far as how the EOP actually worked. You get a lot of junk from an archival perspective, but you also catch things about who's on whose email list, who is sending copies to whom, how does this whole thing work as an organization. You also get a lot of office gossip. You would not necessarily have gotten a lot of information from the emails about who is visiting the EOP buildings. But since whenever I visited one of the buildings, I had to send in my name, date of birth, and social security number, that's part of the record. You can see it in context there as to what else was going on.
Mike, can I jump in just for a second?
Sure.
It's interesting that the way that process works in the Executive Office of the President is that everything is considered a record unless you specifically declare it not to be a record. So the truth is that the path of least resistance was just to let everything slide through the process as a record, even though people knew that it wasn't. And one of the reasons for that was, or is, that if you declared something a non-record, the people who were monitoring what was declared a non-record would call you and ask you to justify why you declared that particular piece of material a non-record. So the path of least resistance through that system was just to let it slide and call it a record.
And also, if you're passing on office gossip, you don't want the records manager looking at that stuff, so you declare it a record. It's simple. Nobody's going to look at records for 25 years. Piece of cake. Again, path of least resistance and unintended consequences. The unintended consequences are the path of least resistance. More stuff goes into record than anybody would have expected originally. So a question for archivists is, what is your greater fear? Is it that you're going to get too much stuff and you're going to have more junk, or is it that you're not going to get the stuff? Stuff is going to slide through that you wished you would have captured. We don't, as archivists and records managers, since we're not looking over people's shoulders, we can't necessarily decide for them whether or not they need to keep things as records, even if they don't think they need to. So the question then becomes, what is the greater fear here? Do I want to keep, perhaps, do I want to run the risk of getting extra stuff, which I will, if we put less emphasis on record, non-record, or is my fear that I'm, you know, if I put less emphasis, I'm going to get too much. If I keep the emphasis I have, I'm going to get less because people don't think of all of the stuff that we think of record as record. So the path we are going down, Ren and I, that we're talking about, will result in more stuff than you would have gotten previously. Is that a good thing or a bad thing from your perspective? We'll come back. We're leaving enough time at the end for questions so we can talk through some of this. But that's one of the questions that we have. Final thing is again a paradigm shift piece. I use dated terms, a different mental model. We need to have a different mental model, we feel, for handling electronic records than we did for paper. The traditional, when you look at email systems now, and you look at records management applications to manage email and other things, the idea is you put them, you put those email into the file categories that you would have had in paper. You essentially put them into subject files. That's not the way people use email. And if we want to understand as archivists how email is used within an organization, we need to have a different paradigm about how it should be organized and how we would accept it into our organization and how people would use it once it's there. If what we're having people do from an archival perspective with email is print it out and put it in a file, that's fine. We will have documentation, perhaps, assuming they do it, that is evidence of how a specific transaction took place. We will not understand what we could about how that person's day went, the fact that they were getting 100 emails a day as opposed to 20. It says something about how they were worked into the system. You get different kinds of information if we think about it differently. And part of what most creators are thinking is, and probably most of you, how much of what you do on email is a record from your perspective? 50% or more. Raise your hands. 25% or less. Come on, let's go. And one would wonder, and we're not going any lower, I usually came out somewhere around 10% would have made the traditional record, non-record cut, at least a record that needed to be managed for more than 120 days. It's something that wasn't transitory. But there's a lot of information in there too. So how we want to handle that as archivists, how we want to think through, is there a different way of looking at that? That's part of what we're trying to raise here. So, what's the impact on appraisal? The basic thing that I see is that having worked with a lot of folks, and especially some of the clients we're working with now as consultants, and I think we may get a better handle because we're consultants. When I was at the National Archives, I was part of the regulatory group that oversaw federal records in agencies, and they probably were a little nicer to me as far as how well they were obeying the regulations. But I think we may get a better handle on this as consultants because people may be a little more honest. But a lot of what people create, they do not think is a record. A record is a final document. A record is a final document that their boss wants or somebody in the organization is asking them for. So there are disagreements among people. I mean, if you... We did a presentation at a federal agency, and the program people there got into a 20-minute discussion of what was a record and what isn't. It was an uninformed discussion, it was long, and it sort of brought home the fact that even these people working in the same program were not in agreement as to what was a record and what they should file. So you've got that level of disagreement. You've got characterizations of other decision that decision makers make in capturing email. Is it a record? Isn't it? And you miss some of these things about if you do it traditionally. Who is on the short list of people they contact? Emails to spouses or love interests will show up. Yep, that's non-record. But then thinking in terms of email as your telephone log. We've always wanted telephone logs of high-level officials. This is essentially the telephone log. All of the people they contacted and a little bit about what they talked to them about. It varies based on the level in the organization, but thinking through how we want to do this, I mean, do you want top-level officials making a decision on what is record or non-record? Or in many cases, top-level officials have their admins doing most of the answering of emails and just forwarding on the ones the admin thinks is most important. One of the federal agencies we're working with has gone to a big bucket type of thing where it says, officials, anybody at this level, pretty much anything is a record unless they specifically say it isn't, and it would be permanent. Mid-level, it's going to be, again, anything except what they say is non-record, is a record and will be kept for 7 to 10 years, somewhere in there. People at a lower level in the organization, it's a shorter retention period. Rather than having them put things into categories, it's simply by position in the organization, figuring that most things that are really important will flow up the food chain. Do you miss something? Are there risks? Sure. But having done appraisal for quite a while, the bigger risk is there's a lot of stuff out there we never see that's going away without ever having a shot at doing any appraisal on it at all. So those are some things to begin to think about when it comes to appraisal and the effect this would have on appraisal. My favorite. One of the things that we have to think about as archivists is what we call the RIM framework analysis cube. Across the front, we've got phases of the traditional life cycle: creation, maintenance, use, assess, essentially appraisal, load into a repository, preserve, access, leverage. You can come up with your own pieces of the life cycle that you think through, but that goes across the front. That's what happens to a record over its life. Coming up the bottom from on the right-hand side there, we've got theory and principles, policy that derives from that, standards that derive from the policy, business process, procedures, and system requirements. Each more granular as you move up. And then going back, we've got various media: paper, electronic office documents, email with attachments, digital audio, whatever. The deal here is that each one of those little cubes that has a piece of the life cycle, one of the pieces of theory through requirements, and one of the media, how we manage paper documents when we appraise them, if we appraise paper documents as permanent, what are the business processes that will have to be in place in order to make sure that those documents are preserved? If we go with email and attachments, what kind of policy should we have in place so that those can be captured? Does this flip out? There we go. And we have an example like this. To preserve email, what are the standards? So we need to, if we're going to do this right, and if you as archivists or us as archivists are going to do this right, we have to think through all of those little blocks for the media that we are going to be accessioning into the archives. If we are going to be accessioning email, what are the standards that we want done so that we can preserve it long term? So that's the complexity that we need to be thinking about as archivists. And the more stuff we take in, the more complexity there's going to be. This is either it's the full employment cube or it's the bad news cube. It depends on whether it depends on your mental model. So, what we need is, I think, a better approach to all of this. And some of the pieces there that we have looked at and we have found work better are: records are part of information assets. Records management must then balance the records themselves. What kind of records are there? The requirements for record keeping. What is it that we have to do to keep good records based on primarily both internal business needs and external oversight needs? Records are better maintained the more litigation there is about them, the more money that's at stake relating to that business process, because people only manage stuff well enough to meet outside expectations. So there are requirements, the risks of poor records management. If I don't manage these well, I may not be able to collect money, or if I manage them well under rewards, if I can get information out of them, I may be able to do a better job of getting new business because I understand the process that got me the last piece of business. And finally, what are the resources available? How do we balance all of that? And in a time when we have fewer resources, both as records managers and as creators to actually manage records, how do we look at risk How do we look at rewards? And how do we look at requirements for record keeping? What we argue is there's such a thing as good enough records management. You balance all that out and you figure out what is good enough for the organization for this kind of record for this period of time. And coming up with the level there where you're not over-investing, but you're actually meeting requirements and reaping the rewards that you can use. Managing everything using records management principles, we feel that that's important. Records have to be identified, they have to have a retention, they have to be findable. They have to be findable by the organization, not just by the individual. And how this is done in the management of records and other business assets depends on business needs. That's sort of the bottom line. The deal that this book on Web 2.0 brings up is that if you're going to have sustainable records and sustainable archives, as Ren said, it has to be scalable. Secondly, it has to meet the needs of the business and the creator and the external parties. We can't do something that's going to go against that because they won't buy in. It has to be something that we can market to management within an organization so they see the benefits of investing in change because it's going to take change. So what are the advantages, what are the rewards there that they will reap? And finally, is it something that all of the information professions, all of the people can agree upon that this is the way forward? This is Ren's discussion of the coalition and all of the perspectives that have to come together. If we're going to have better records management in the Web 2.0 era, how can we, as archivists, how can we leverage what Web 2.0 is doing for the records creators? How do we get better documentation out of all of the collaboration? What is it out of all of that collaborative stuff that we do on Web 2.0 that we want? How will it help us get better documentation for our archives? So, what's the next phase? Archivists need to think about whether record non-record is still useful. It's one of the things we need to, is it something that we want to keep following that path, or do we want to find a new path that will give us hopefully different results? Our feeling is if we maintain a narrow definition of record, we risk losing a lot of the richness of information. So we as archivists really need to be ready to put some time into thinking about what the implications will be for us. What's it going to mean? How would it affect appraisal? How would it affect description? How would it affect our use of the concept of a record series? So these are the sorts of things that we need to think about in the next phase. So, we've got questions. And we've got some time for questions. A little time.
Yeah. So what we really wanted to do at this point was to get some reaction from you, for you to put on kind of your emotional hat, kind of what does your gut say about all this? I mean, obviously, we have our own history with record and non-record. How does the notion of doing away with that distinction strike you? We'd appreciate some response. And if you want to come up here where we can get your captured, I'd bring it to you if I could.
Okay, the question is, what definition of record, non-record are we using? The speaker comes from government, where pretty much everything is a record that is created in the course of business. There's nothing in your definition that says and is necessary to keep due to for evidence. In that case, if all it says is anything created in the course of business, then it's all record. Most organizations do not have that. There's usually the caveat at the bottom, necessary to document the organization, business, blah, 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 or for informational value. And there's that sort of gray area that you can drive a truck through to mix a metaphor. So that was where we were coming from, that in many organizations there is that ability, there's that gray area that people have to work with. Other thoughts?
I think it would be an interesting question. How many of you work with organizations where the distinction is not made between record and non-record? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of this group of probably about, what would you say, 45.
250, 300, no, 45. Yeah. Maybe 50.
So, a fair proportion. Don't have this dichotomy as part of their world.
And at least the implication that we got from the one speaker is it works pretty well and makes things pretty easy. For those of you who are in that situation, is that true? Is this something, do you have problems?
Just so everybody can hear what you're going to say.
Yeah, I'm Tim Baker. I'm with the Maryland State Archives. And I think most states, their public record law, or at least their the definition of what is a record, springs from the Public Information Act or FOIA or whatever. And they generally all do say a record is anything that is created by or received by a state agency in the conduct of public business. Well, that's pretty much everything. But nobody believes it. All the times meeting with very high-ranking state government officials that, you tell them that, and they say, well, show me. You say, well, it's Section 10-604, the state government article of the Annotated Code of Maryland. And they look at that, and they say, well, that can't possibly be what it means. So it's a real problem. But I think you're absolutely right. You can't make a distinction between what is a record and what is not a record, because I think you head down a slippery slope.
Thank you. Either you head down a slippery slope or you fall off a cliff. It depends on how you look at this.
So if we go this way, how does it change your world? How does what you do change if this dichotomy is removed? We'd appreciate your comments. This is your part of the program. Would you mind coming up?
Come on
please.
Now.
We would come to you if we possibly could.
I can get closer than you can.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, I owe you. Could just stand up and yell. How's that? Well, my question really, it relates to the whole model. Why even talk about a record then? It seems like the model deals with information assets. So why even talk about record or non-record if you're using this model? And this reminds me of the discussion that we had 20-some years ago, which I remember,
Groundhog Day.
About what is an electronic record. And we went through the whole theory cycle of what is an electronic record, is it an information asset, I don't know if we called it that or not, and came up with, yes, it's still a record, and forgot that, it said that the format really didn't make a difference because it was evidence, that's where we came up with a content structure and, the three elements of a record. But this reminds me of the discussion that we had 20-some years ago, and maybe what it's showing is that in the real world, how do we implement the theory in practice that we, mostly theory, that we came up with. And I'd be very interested in the next phase of how do we make this happen with the technology, Ren, that you were talking about. Always thinking of the real world, because I've been in both records management and archives. So, but back to the first point about what I assume then that in this model, we really wouldn't talk about records.
No, that is correct. The idea, why we raised this was we wanted to sort of get feedback from you as a community of, are we on the right track on this? This is what we wanted to see. Is this something that, this is the way we ought to be going, or is there a reaction? There's a person, one more. I think we have time for one more. Come on down.
Just one more.
Just one more. You get the last word.
I wanted to follow on Deb's comment. A lot of people, at least I work in a private organization, and they don't talk so much about records. When you talk to IT, they talk about data elements. So when at the end of the day are we saving this? And are we going to still call it a record? Again, getting back to follow on Deb's question, why are we still calling it a record?
So the question is, if IT is determining these to be data elements, why aren't we using that? We can use that just fine. I think what we're trying to do is figure out the path to make that transition so that we can simply say, you know, we don't, it's not what we call it, it's how we use it, it's how long we need to use it. So that's what we're trying to get the move through that change. Thank you all very much for your comments and your participation. Ren and I will be up here and be happy to take questions for a while. Thank you.